office and here on behalf of Chelsea Nicole Costin.
Would you like to reserve a portion of your time for rebuttal?
Yes, please, Your Honor. 3 minutes.
All right. You have that. You may proceed when you're ready.
And, Your Honor, this is a case in which, on a rarity, all the facts are not in dispute. Everything isn't agreed to as per the facts. My charge, the offense date was June 20th, 2014. One of the conviction orders we all agreed was a proper conviction order that could be used for enhancement purposes. The third conviction order, however, was one that had an offense date of June 18th, 2014, and that was 2 days before the offense date of the case I had. The conviction date of that particular offense date was June 21st, 2014. And so what you have is one conviction order with a prior conviction date, one conviction order with a conviction date after my offense date. And then it comes down to a strict statutory analysis, Your Honor, of the actual code section that applied. What you have in 18.2-104 is that's the punishment for conviction of a misdemeanor larceny charge. And the actual language that was the issue before the court, it was that when a person is convicted of an offense of larceny or any offense deemed to be or punished as larceny under any provision of the code and is alleged in the warrant, indictment, or information on which he is convicted and admitted or found by the jury or judge before whom he is tried, that he has been before convicted. And so that's the question. What does the wording before convicted mean? And the Commonwealth relied on the beginning of that statute, when a person is, and then going to the language of before convicted. So then the issue becomes in a statutory analysis of whether or not, first off, if that language is unambiguous, and it's whether or not if someone is before convicted, does that mean then there must be a conviction order with a conviction date prior to the...
We get to that, but where that word appears, it's the object of the verb alleged. And so it's the allegation of a previous conviction that seems to apply to. It's not that it gets to applying to defining the offense of larceny, but has he been before convicted, alleged that? If you take out the extra wording, it's the object of that verb, and therefore it seems to me it would apply that the before convicted has to be dealing with what must be in the allegation.
Well, with respect to the allegation, Your Honor, that the person has previously been convicted, this is a recidivism statute in order to enhance the person to have more than one conviction. So they're alleging in a petty larceny third offense that the person has previously been convicted. And so that language has to come from somewhere in the statute. The statute itself, when it starts out, when it's been previously convicted, and then it goes on to say before convicted, and certainly the artfulness of what it enhances or doesn't enhance, Your Honor, is certainly a question. But ultimately, you look at the different statutes that the court sees before it, and in this particular one, it's interpreted to be a before convicted, and that's even listed as in the Papel case, it was a footnote. In the Papel case, that the before convicted part of Papel, Your Honor, they mention in that particular case, which involved a sex offense and involved pornography, but then it broke down into different subparts and footnotes, rather, footnote 2, footnote 3. And in one of the footnotes, it specifically sets out that the two that require prior convictions, one was the assault and battery of a family member, and one, Your Honor, was the petty larceny statute. And so those two are grouped together when you have under another section, when in Papel it mentions the DUI statute, and it mentions another as well under there that talks about prior offenses. And so you have offense language, also you have prior conviction language. And in this particular statute, you see the prior conviction language is listed here. And that's the center of my argument, Your Honor. It's that's what they're arguing, that there has to be a prior conviction before convicted. You know, certainly there has to be some way to then allege that this is a petty larceny third offense. And so what you have then is a determination of whether or not you have an unambiguous reading or an ambiguous reading. And if the court finds that the wording is more ambiguous, then certainly both interpretations would work, both my interpretation and the interpretation of the Commonwealth. Both would be arguments that we both would have. It could be read both ways if the court believes it's ambiguous, and then it should be strictly construed with respect to the defense rather than the Commonwealth. When two are equally looked at as arguments that could certainly be adhered to the same statute and on both sides could equally work, then certainly if the court feels it's an ambiguous language at that point, then certainly under that perspective, then I'd argue still at that point that my client should in fact have the benefit of the doctrine of lenity and that it should be construed in her behalf. When you look at the wording in all the prior statutes, and as noted in Papel specifically, they break down in...
You say as noted in what specifically? I couldn't hear
I'm sorry, what, Your Honor?
You said as noted in something.
Papel. P-A-P-O-L. I apologize, Your Honor. I have sinus problems right now, so...
It's all right.
But in any event, in footnote 2 and in footnote 3, it specifically spells out the different groupings of them, as mentioned earlier. But when you look at all the different statutes and you look at the language in these different statutes that is mentioned in the footnotes, in the pornography statute, 18.2-374.1:1, it mentions any person who commits a second or subsequent violation. So the wording in that statute lists as violation. And the reason I'm bringing up all these different statutes, Your Honor, is the different language in each one of these. The firearm statute lists a second or subsequent conviction. So certainly none of these use the words prior or before convicted, rather. In the assault and family member, it mentions previously convicted of two offenses. And in that one, it's been ruled to be that there must be a prior conviction in order to get to a second or subsequent offense on that one. On the DUI and on the HO, or habitual offender rather, on the DUI, you have specifically of a prior offense. And under the habitual offender, you have a second or subsequent offense. All of those specifically spell out, and that's one of the arguments I have as well, is you've got on one hand in many of these things the words either violation or offense, and then in others you have the wording conviction. And in this particular instance, you have before convicted as specifically what is spelled out here. And in particular, the fact that it does, in fact, involve recidivism. And in my view, Your Honor, specifically, you know, what the intent is on the recidivism statute would be to actually have someone be previously convicted of one of these charges, to have time to actually think about what they're doing before they're then charged with another to enhance the punishment. And a petty larceny third offense certainly is a plain view or plain meaning of what the statute and what the legislative intent would certainly have been to actually look at a recidivism viewpoint of it. And so essentially, Your Honor, what I'm asking the court to do is consider the language of what says before convicted, find that there should have been this complained of prior conviction order should in fact have been one in which there was a prior conviction prior to the offense date, and to remand the matter back for sentencing, Your Honor, with respect to a petty larceny. My client had always agreed that she had in fact stolen. The issue specifically was whether or not it rose to the level of a felony and a petty larceny third offense. And I'd like to reserve any other time, Your Honor, in rebuttal, unless the court has any questions.
Any further questions for Ms. Miller? Thank you, Ms. Miller.
Thank you.
Have your rebuttal time. All right, Mr. Murphy.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, Jim Murphy for the Commonwealth. First of all, as Judge Bumgarner has already pointed out, the language itself of the statute where the has occurs, it doesn't say had been convicted, it says has been convicted, refers to the allegation. So the only requirement, of course, is that the conviction has occurred at the time of the allegation. Now, pretty briefly, there are three kinds of recidivism statutes. There's the child pornography, where if you commit eight possessions of child pornography on the same day, you can be convicted of recidivism on all but the first. And then you have cases, situations like this, where you just have to have committed the conviction has to occur before conviction in the new trial. Then, of course, you have 18.2.248C, which says that the, and interestingly, uses the same language for most of the statute about, it has the same language about has been before convicted, but then goes on and adds, such prior conviction occurred before the date of the offense. And this is the third kind where, in fact, the conviction has to have resulted before you committed the offense. And importantly, because the legislature knows how to do that, knows how to make the conviction before the offense part of the crime, when it doesn't do that, you usually accept a different interpretation. And here, again, it's even more significant because we have the very same language in 104, and with that in 248, 18.248C. And the legislature found a need to attach that language about the prior conviction occurred before the date of the offense, apparently because they didn't think the language as in 104 has that requirement. That you cannot, that they didn't read the language in 104 as the defendant here suggests you should. They read it as requiring only a conviction before the new conviction and not a conviction before the offense. And they certainly could have written that into 104 by adding that language, which they added to 18.248, but they didn't. And when the legislature makes that clear, that in fact there is a different language here, and that language is what makes the distinction, that the absence of that language here, I think, makes it clear that they're talking only, all you have to do is allege the prior conviction in the indictment and prove it. Prove that the conviction occurred before the date of the indictment, before the charging document, and before the proof is found. And I think, you know, basically that's our position, that there, as I say, the legislature could certainly have made the 104 read the way the defendant suggests, as it did in 18.2.248. But having not done that, it seems to me you have to find the language as not requiring that it occur before the offense, because legislature has, in fact, in another statute, done exactly that, because it didn't feel that the language in 104 would satisfy its intent. Its intent in that statute was to make sure that the conviction occurred before the new crime. It didn't do that here, and it seems to me that what we have is clear evidence of legislature's intent by the absence of the language in 18.2.248 in 104. And unless there are any questions from the court, I think the statute clearly indicates what has to be done, and it was followed in this case. And I request it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy.
Your Honor, the fact that the legislature did not put something specifically in a code section does not mean that it's not ambiguous. And certainly the fact that one statute is corrected and not another statute, or something is added to one statute and not another statute, certainly, yes, the legislature knows how to do so, but the legislature could also have said that prior offenses and could have made this as plain and simple as the DUI and habitual offender laws, or use the word violations. They did not do so under any of those. So then it comes straight down again to whether or not something is ambiguous or not. If it is ambiguous, if the court finds that the language is ambiguous rather than unambiguous, and looks then and says that both interpretations are something that could be done by both sides, both reasonable interpretations of what the statute could mean, then certainly it should be construed to my client's behalf. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. We will greet counsel, and then this court will stand in recess until tomorrow.